Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We'll be talking about young people and their commitment to our community in just a couple of moments. But first, a look at the aftermath of a Ferguson teenager shooting death by a local police officer once again. There was another confrontation last night just after a call for an end to violence in Ferguson. Now there's a demonstration taking place in Clayton near the office of Prosecutor Bob McCullough. St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Lippman is on the story, as she has been from the very beginning. Rachel, are you there?
Good afternoon, Don. I am.
Right. Well, set the scene for us, if you would, Rachel.
Don, the bulk of the protest has moved on. At its peak, I'd say there was probably about 150 to 200 people taking a tour of the streets of Clayton. Police took mostly a hands-off approach to it. They moved cop cars ahead to let them take clear passes in traffic. And there is a police presence still outside of the County Justice Center, which is where the jail is. But no riot gear tonight, and I don't see the presence of any St. Louis County cops either. There's still a group of probably about 30 to 35 young people still protesting in front of the Justice Center. And that's actually something that some of the more seasoned activists in the community have noted, that it is young people who are starting to pick up the protest mantle and continue speaking out about their frustrations over Michael Brown's killing and just some of the underlying issues they say led to Michael Brown's killing.
What specifically are they saying?
It's a lot of just frustration with the way that African Americans are treated by the police in the community, a lack of economic opportunity. One group is heeding the message of the NAACP last night, which was to translate your anger into righteous indignation. There's a group out here having people post their solutions to the problem on a board that they could start working towards, but not everybody's buying into that. As one of the young protesters told me, we've tried to work with them. It's never worked. Let's just pull back and get out of their lives. Let's not try to work with them.
You covered that session last night, the NAACP meeting, did you not?
I did, Don.
And, you know, it was I watched it on television, and there were some very important things that were said there. But, you know, I had the sense that everyone was sort of preaching to the choir. There weren't many young people there, and that's where the message has to go.
It was not a very young crowd last night, and when I talked to actually a young activist who was there, she told me that she had wanted more sort of concrete solutions, not what we can't do, but what can we do to get past this. But it was definitely the mothers in the community, the grandmothers in the community, the aunts in the community who were there. And I asked a couple of the protesters today, who are the young people who have been out in the streets at night and who are the ones falling victims of the gas and the rubber bullets? Who are they listening to go home? And nobody really seems to know what it would take to get them to stay in the streets or to be more productive in their anger, as the NAACP president asked them to be last night.
You know, my impression is, and my understanding is, that there's going to be a town hall meeting of some sort tonight in Ferguson or around Ferguson, specifically geared for the young people. Is that your understanding?
That is the understanding. That one of the reverends who was at the NAACP event last night, she was one of the people who wanted some more solutions, and she said, this is my solution. The reason communities are burning is because it's the only way the youth have to talk. So we're going to give the youth a place to talk. It's Tracy Blackman of Christ the King United Church of Christ. She says she has commitment from both Ferguson Mayor Tom Knowles and from the Police Chief Thomas Jackson to be at the event tonight.
And I guess everybody's waiting to see what influence, if any, Reverend Al Sharpton is going to have. He's meeting at the old courthouse, as I understand it, at 12:30 this afternoon. I think he's likely to be reaching out to the young people.
I have heard different things about where Sharpton is meeting. I don't know who his target audience is. You know, I don't know enough about who the youth are listening to today in this community or really in any community to know how much influence he's going to have. I don't know. They probably know who he is. I don't know if they listen to or they hear their voice.
Well, let's get back to where you are right now in terms of what you've witnessed there this morning. Any difference in tone? You've told us what they're saying, but is the tone abated at all? Is it moderated at all, do you think?
No. If anything, the protest has gotten louder and calling for more extreme measures. Again, this is an older group of more seasoned activists who have been getting up saying we want to boycott the place, we want to shut it down, we want to bring in 10,000 people to shut down the county and to boycott. The group that's here today is just saying, you know, treat us with dignity, give us the respect. We are Michael Brown. He was shot unarmed. Treat us fairly. We want justice for this. But they are today listening to the police to stay on the sidewalk.
So I gather that there's no sense that the emotion and tension is necessarily abating in this thing.
No. If anything, it's beginning to ramp up. There's actually a couple of individuals here from Middle Tennessee State University who came up who say that they because they support the cause.
Right. Well, I understand also that they're likely to identify the officer who was involved in that shooting sometime today. It'll be interesting to see what the fallout is from that, if in fact they go ahead and do it.
I've heard very different things as to whether it's going to be announced. I've heard different things about who would be announcing it, at what time they'd be announcing it. That is why many of the protesters are here today, because they think that that's going to happen, that that name is going to be announced.
All right. Well, we'll let you go, Rach. You'll have had a very busy 48 hours or so. Anything you want to add before your phone conks out?
Nothing today. Thanks, Don.
Rachel Lippman reporting from Clayton, scene of a small demonstration, relatively small demonstration this morning. Rachel Lippman of St. Louis Public Radio. Okay, we'll move on to other things. This is a different area involving young people we're going to be talking about today. The future of St. Louis will, to a very large degree, be in the hands of today's younger men and women, the 20 and 30-somethings. Their energy and commitment to the community will determine how we evolve socially and commercially. We're fortunate to have a large number of these young people in our community who feel that commitment now and are enthusiastically acting upon it. We have some of them joining us on today's program. Jeff and Randy Vines own the creative design company STL Style. That's on Cherokee. They are unabashed cheerleaders for St. Louis, as well as passionate urbanists and historic preservation advocates. Rosa Mayer moved here from New York City. She helped launch the startup incubator T-Rex and is now director of business relations with Launch Code, which helps programmers get into the IT field. Jason Wilson is a young entrepreneur who owns Chronicle Coffee and Northwest Coffee Roasting Company. Alderman Scott Ogilvie's interest is in getting more young people involved in politics. He'll be joining us by phone. And a little later, we'll talk with Jonathan Goldford, the board chair of Launch St. Louis, which develops young leadership for St. Louis nonprofits. Whew, I'm almost out of breath after all of that. Thank you, folks, for being with us in studio. You know, before we move on to what our subject at hand is today, I think it's related to what's going on in Ferguson to some degree. All of you folks here in the studio are very much interested in the image of our community, the standing of our community. So let me get your take. It doesn't have to be deep thought analysis. Rosa, I'll start with you. With regard to what's going on and how it impacts this community.
Yeah, I think this is something that's on everybody's mind. It's on my mind. It's unspoken when you walk down the street next to people. See how it unfolds. And I think it's an opportunity to take some problems that we have in our city and take it to the next level, make a more diverse police force.
Jason Wilson, your take.
Yeah, my take is it makes me nervous. This situation makes me nervous because I've been seeing this all my life, situations like this. And I have two young black males that I'm raising, 6 and 4, named Jason and Julian. And the one thing I don't want them to be involved in is to fall victim to a situation like this. Mm-hmm. And so I'm definitely nervous. I know growing up, you know, I was arrested and accosted a couple of times and for nothing. So, I mean, I can only imagine what it's like. So,
have you? You are an African American. I want our audience to realize that if they don't already, given what you've said. But have you have what I often heard referred to as the talk with those youngsters of yours yet?
So Jason and Julie and I, we have a dialogue about it. First of all, my wife Shanti and I, we always talk about it in front of them. And some may say that they're a little bit too – it's too early for that because they're 6 and 4. But like any other parent, I think my kids are wonderful and smart. So we dialogue like this all the time from and tell them and talk to them about things like this. So,
well, you watch, as we all did, the demonstration and the looting the other night. I'm curious, as are you a young businessman? And you've got one of your shops is in the Blumeyer area.
Correct.
Which has a certain history. What were you thinking when you watched all that happen?
My thoughts were, you know, I hate to see people destroying and rioting in that manner, but I do understand the significance and what it does. You know, rioting is a form of vocalizing how you feel. And if you look at, like, in Cairo, when they overthrew Mubarak, you know, people rioted and they got what they wanted. But when you're oppressed and you lack resources and your hands are tied, people will come together, they rise up and they overthrow. And that's kind of what this situation is. They're not looking to overthrow, I don't think, but they're looking to make some changes, get people's attention and have this dialogue that's overdue.
In one of your conversations with one of our producers, you said the black brand is weak. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I made a statement on the TV show that I'm on called BAPS on Lifetime. And the debate between my friend Anisha and I was about the black brand. I said the black brand is weak. And what I mean by that is the black brand consists of oppression. It consists of struggle, being disadvantaged, all those things. And that is the brand of the black community collectively. And although there are some folks that are doing well individually, but collectively we're still struggling. We need to discuss that because there's an unconscious bias when I don't know who the police officer was, black or white, right? But he made the decision to shoot this person X amount of times. And because of that, there may be some unconscious bias towards African Americans, or especially when you're poor and black. So that's what I mean by the black brand is weak.
Do you want to do a commercial for BAP, a Black American Prince or Princess? When can we watch it?
On Lifetime, New Time, moved to 10 o'clock Wednesdays, 10 Central, 11 Eastern. And, every Wednesday, watch it. It's a good show. It talks about internal racism, classism, things of this nature that we're dealing with right now. So it's just really good.
Okay. Well, folks can watch for that. Let's move along to Jeff and Randy Vines. I'll start with you and ask the same question we started this with regard to image and how it's impacted by what's going on.
Sure. Let me qualify. The intro that you gave us was very accurate. You called us unabashed cheerleaders of the city, which we are and we're very proud of. Because I think St. Louis has wonderful, amazing qualities, and more good than bad exists in this metropolitan area. I will say that it's very important to keep things in context. This is in no way excusing or justifying what is going on in Ferguson, because it is symbolic of a much more systemic issue in our community and many others. What I think is important is to establish the reality that this is not just a St. Louis problem. This is an American problem. This is an American cultural problem dating back centuries. No community in the country is immune to the potential of something like this erupting. We saw it in 92 with Rodney King in Los Angeles. We saw it with Trayvon Martin in Florida. These are things that can occur anywhere at any time. And I think that it's an opportunity for us to kind of take a closer look at what we're doing wrong in St. Louis and what we're doing right, what other places are doing better, and just align ourselves with the determination to strive for better. This can be a teaching moment, and some very positive changes can occur as a result of these awful, horrible, tragic events.
Well, it certainly has happened in other communities across the country over the years, but it's happening here now, mm-hmm. and it's getting front page and headline attention and lead story attention on broadcast outlets throughout the country today. So that's putting St. Louis front and center.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think St. Louis bears the brunt of negative press more often than it does positive. And it's really unfortunate because there is so much good happening. And I think the original topic of this conversation was the younger generation reclaiming the city and embracing it. And a big part of that is because it's diverse. You know, in the city of St. Louis, for the most part, you can't avoid diversity if you try. And that's what so many of us welcome and are energized by. And so if the Ferguson tragedy is an example of all that is broken in the region, I really think that the progress happening in places like Cherokee Street and The Grove and so many other neighbors, Blumeyer, is a display of all that is working in St. Louis.
Well put. Scott Ogilvie, are you there?
I am, Don. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Nice to talk to you. Let me get you in on this and get your take on the image issue resulting from what's going on in Ferguson.
Well, I haven't considered the image issue too much. I think that, the situation, the death of Michael Brown is, and the reaction from the community, I think it's a reflection of this American tension that has gone back for decades. And when there are these, clear instances of injustice, I think people's frustrations rise to the surface. And, I would encourage people who are interested in the situation to Take a look at an MSNBC story that ran, I think, this morning, and had a good interview with a witness, a person that Michael Brown was walking with and talking to right before the incident happened. And, you know, the truth, I suppose, always lies somewhere in the middle. But, you know, in this case, I think there is the, or at least I hope there is, the opportunity for a just outcome, because there were a number of witnesses there. And, you know, I hope that's a place that the community gets to. I guess I would also say briefly, it isn't to some degree relevant that this is an incident that happened in St. Louis County, because I think it highlights the fact that this really is a regional issue, and hopefully makes it relevant to the entire region and gets us thinking about, you know, our common shared interests. And you know, we might have in the past thought of, you know, tension between a community and a police department as something that was particular to the city of St. Louis, but the truth is it's not. It's something that transcends the region, and it's something I think everybody that lives in the St. Louis region should pay some attention to.
Well, I'm sure everyone hopes that some good can come out of this tragedy, and we're all hoping for that. I'm sure everyone listening and everyone at the table. I have to take a break now. You just heard from one of our guests, Alderman Scott Ogilvie. He was just on the line with us and will remain for the rest of the program. Rosa Mayer is with us. She's Director of Business Relations with LaunchCode, helps programmers get into the IT field. Jeff and Randy Vines are here. They co-own STL Style on Cherokee. And also with us is Jason Wilson, who owns Chronicle and Northwest Coffee. We'll be back to continue the conversation in just a moment. Stay with us. Ultimately, we'll want to hear from you, too, at 382-8255. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Welcome back. Before we continue our conversation on the commitment of young people to our community, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. As we have said, another rally protesting the shooting death of Michael Brown was held this morning in Clayton. It's just breaking up now. Also, civil rights activist Al Sharpton is holding a news conference at this hour with Brown's parents and attorney as black leaders balance their calls for calm with insistence that justice be done for Brown's killing. And student scores on standardized tests are down in most subjects in Missouri. Statewide figures released today by the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education show that fewer students scored proficient or better this year on tests for communications arts, mathematics, and science compared to last year. The only overall improvement was in social studies. You can learn more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Jeff and Randy Vines, Rosa Mayer, Alderman Scott Ogilvie, and Jason Wilson. Jason, I'll come back to you. As we indicated during the break, and I want to get a little bit away from the Ferguson story, but it's hard to get too far away. But the point I want to raise, and we'll get everybody in on this, is the fact that what's going on out there seems to be a young person versus older person situation, with the older folks saying, the younger folks saying, they don't quite, the others don't quite get what we're up to and what our frustrations are. How do you buy into that?
Well, you know, I'm not sure what to make of that dialogue, if that's even the conflict. I do know that there is a call for action, though. People want to see, you know, this old perspective on how we handle racism and civil rights. And then there's this, the new young folk is a much more aggressive, different perspective. They're hearing different things, so they're affected by pop culture, and they want action now. Mm-hmm. And so I think there is, you know, if we had to classify this, there is some kind of conflict of interest on how we get things done. But I'm not sure. I haven't heard much of that. Mm-hmm. So,
well, again, let's turn away from that particular part of the story. Rosa, did you want to say something?
I just wanted to say that also as a young generation who's taking to other sources of media, that last night I looked at Twitter and the calm protests were retweeted maybe 5 times. The violent Galleria shutdown was retweeted 150 times. And so we're kind of doing it in ourselves to amp. The younger generation seems to be amping this up. And We just have to pay attention to spreading all the messages.
And there was an attempt to really associate the Galleria situation with what's going on in Ferguson, and apparently there's no connection at all. And I also saw on Twitter that there was suggestion that tanks were on the streets, which puts a whole new perspective to the dialogue there. And if that's wrong, there is a certain inflammatory, potentially dangerous aspect to that. How about Jeff Moran?
I will say this is nothing really new, except that social media is so much more pervasive now than it ever used to be. But you can look at what happened to Gaslight Square and trace it back to the sensationalism of the newspapers back then, saying that, oh, there were purse snatchings and assaults in the neighborhood, and it kept people away, and it becomes kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy when this happens. Understanding full well that news relies on ratings, and that that's their job, is to incite some kind of emotion and sway public opinion one way or another. It's just very unfortunate that that communities like St. Louis that really can't afford this kind of perpetual, just beating that it gets all the time in media. It really undermines so much of the good and the progress that's happening in this community. And I will just say that, one of the most tragic outcomes of this, aside from the obvious that a young life was lost, and it seemed like he had an awful lot to look forward to, that's the real crux of the issue. But there are so many ancillary negative effects of this kind of thing, and that is kind of concealing what great strides have been made and how young people now are embracing city living and not only are not afraid of living in diverse communities, but actually embrace it and seek it out. And that's a story that's not often told because maybe it's not as sexy on the airwaves. But it definitely applies to St. Louis and many cities of its ilk.
What motivates you with regard to, I've got Randy and Jeff, they're identical twins, folks, bear with me. What motivates you to become involved and be, you mentioned cheerleaders before as I did, but so involved in the community?
Well, I think we can trace it back to when our dad took us around his old neighborhood on the north side, one of the city's most distressed neighborhoods now, by most measures. And he would point out where he lived, where his grandparents lived, where his grandfather's store was. He talked about the old streetcar lines and all the places they used to walk to at all hours. Kind of painted a picture of an ideal urban environment that, who wouldn't want to be a part of that? And we saw the potential and the bones to build a city like that again. And so much of that still exists here. And the people, of course, are what makes a city. So
I would say the legacy of St. Louis, the story it tells in American history, is so inspiring to us. We've always been really proud of it, never made any apologies for loving St. Louis, being from here, even when it wasn't that popular to feel that way. Just recognizing the fact that no place is perfect. It's very easy to get up and follow the crowd to the more established magnet cities on the coast. But we always saw the beauty in sticking by our hometown, working toward, improving the community that we live in and helping it reach its potential, maybe contributing something that isn't already there, being a part of work in progress.
Scott Ogilvie, what motivated you to get into politics at a relatively young age?
The short answer is just that I thought I could do a better job than the person who preceded me. And I realized to get there, you got to throw your hat in the ring. Just to talk about sort of younger people in politics generally in St. Louis. St. Louis actually has, I think, a pretty good reputation or history of electing younger people to office. And there's been quite a few lately. Besides me, there's Chris Carter, Antonio French, Casey Starr Triplett, and Mike McMillan were both only 26 when they were elected to become alderman. Shane Cohn was 29 or 30. The city of St. Louis has two state reps that are in their 20s, Joshua Peters and Michael Butler. So there's a whole cadre of folks who are getting into politics kind of in their 20s or early 30s, and voters have tended to support them, which is terrific. Now, I think the flip side of that is that once those folks are in office, what we know about voting and who shows up to vote is that very frequently younger voters do not show up to vote in local elections. And so sometimes we leave our youngest elected officials without the sort of young person constituency behind them, because it actually turns out it's an older group of people electing younger officials. So that's something I've talked about and lectured about and try to bring to people's attention, that once we get these younger folks in office, which are doing a good job of, I think we really need younger voters to keep participating, show up to the polls, and support them in their endeavors, because I do think the younger elected officials tend to approach new policy and policy change more aggressive generally.
So many people are turned off by politics, and forgive me, Scott, but and politicians these days, primarily because of what's going on the national level. Do you see young people resisting that turn-off mode?
Well, you know, there's a huge difference between national politics and local politics that I think is not always very well understood. You know, national politics is all about left-right and ideology, and local politics, I think, is much more about, you know, communicating to voters, to residents, ideas, service, and also thinking, you know, particularly, you know, in St. Louis and St. Louis County, it's thinking about what works in an urban environment. And that really has very little to do with left and right. So I always encourage voters to kind of leave what they think about left, right, you know, Republican, Democrat, national politics at the door when they approach local elections, because local elections, I think, are much more about individual people and what those candidates really bring to the table.
Right. Rosa, let me turn back to you now. We'll get away from politics for a moment, unless you want to comment on it. But I'm curious as to your what motivates you, why you are here now doing what you're doing.
Yeah, so I moved here to do AmeriCorps 5 years ago, and I worked for a nonprofit called College Bound, and it was started by a woman from the East Coast who realized that there were students with inequalities in our public schools and couldn't get in to colleges and didn't have the same background. She said, I'm going to fix this, and pulled kids out of high school and said, I'm going to help you get into college and not sign up for these bad loans. And I just loved that in St. Louis there was a problem, and then we're just going to figure out how to solve it no matter what. And that led me to not wanting to move back to the East and stay here, and I didn't really know how. And so I wrote the mayor of St. Louis and said, hey, I'm 23. I don't want to leave. These are my interests. Who should I talk to?
Did you find St. Louis welcoming? We've done a number of programs with people, transplants out of town, saying that's not always the case.
I very much so welcoming. I feel like people stick their necks out here, and I've been embraced in this community and do it for other people too.
Jason, what caused you to say, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it here, and you've got places all over the area.
Right.
What motivated you to do that here?
Well, the reason why I chose Renaissance, Grand, Blumeyer is because I wanted to provide confidence in the community. I think there's a need for middle class Black America to do a better job of rolling their sleeves up and investing in the community, and so my thought was, why don't I do a for profit business in that community? And the coffee company and the coffee shop just happened to be the thing I thought was the best, because the one thing that that they say we lack in the north side of St. Louis is places for community engagement and places that are healthy for dialogue. And I wanted to make sure that we provide a place for that. So here we have Chronicle Coffee born in Blumeyer.
And to the Vines brothers, with regard to Cherokee, which is a very famous and established street, why did you decide this is where we're going to go and this is where we're going to set up shop?
Before I answer that, I do want to compliment Jason. Chronicle Coffee at Blumeyer is an awesome place. I love that the posters on the pictures on the walls kind of pay homage to the public housing history of St. Louis, which is a story that doesn't often get told in any positive light, but fantastic establishment.
Well, how's the coffee?
It's great. I love it. Who doesn't like Northwest coffee?
Can I make another point? You and I are similar. You and your brother are similar because you all did choose to put it in the city. And, you know, I think there's a lot to St. Louis that people don't respect, especially with this north of Del Mar divide. Mm-hmm. You know, so I want people to understand. And this, what this does is this issue with Ferguson, this also mars the brand of the black community. Because now what's popular now in the news is rioting and violence. And that's the same stereotype that's been put on black Americans for years. So now, for me, coming across the north of Del Mar to get coffee could you know, hinder my sales, or could hinder the interest in this urban domestic emerging market that people call underserved.
You know, that's kind of what I was getting at with my first question with regard to image and how it is impacted by what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, that's a perfect segue to answer your previous question to us of why Cherokee Street. And I think what Jason said is very apropos to us, too. You know, we could very easily open our St. Louis-themed merchandise store in the Loop or some more established neighborhood with a lot more foot traffic. We could probably make a lot more money on retail traffic. However, as a small independent business, we really feel strongly about building our business upon our own personal creeds, and that is giving back to a neighborhood that needs us more. And we're inspired by the grittiness and the unpolishedness of Cherokee Street. I think that it's really kind of a microcosm of St. Louis at large, in that it's very overlooked, you know, regionally. A lot of people have the wrong idea about it, but as soon as you get to know it, you realize what makes it special. And so Cherokee Street has this very unique combination of personalities, history, retail, residential, and everything in between, kind of mixing together in this really unusual mix that makes it a street that everyone can kind of, there's a palpable energy there, and you can just tell people are really passionate about it.
How do you get people there?
Why don't you speak to that?
Unexpectedly, we've created kind of a destination. There are many great anchor businesses all up and down Cherokee Street, and I think a lot of people know Antique Row, which is east of Jefferson, but the more funky, artsy immigrant district is west of Jefferson, and in our experience, you know, we're kind of a destination on the west side of Cherokee Street, and to our surprise, a lot of people are coming from the suburbs, and they always say, oh my gosh, we never knew this existed, or I haven't been to Cherokee Street in 40 years. And the coolest thing about that is that we see a lot of these people come back the next week and try different restaurants and are even looking for apartments to live there, because I'd like to say we played a part in opening their eyes and exposing them to a neighborhood they otherwise wouldn't ever have any reason to visit.
Jason, how do you get people to Glumar?
Well, I think a couple ways. One is we constantly advocate and talk about stretching the city out. You know, St. Louis, if you're in St. Louis, you pretty much hang between Del Mar, Loop, Central West End, and then downtown, right? So, but in order for it to be a great place to live and get other companies to come here and people who go to college at WashU, St. Louis University, all those places, you got to expand the boundaries. And so we just talk about, you know, expanding the boundaries and making this place a more of a metro communal spot that includes the north side of St. Louis and the south side as well. So that's how we do it. We just constantly talk about the good things about this urban domestic emerging market as opposed to the underserved.
I have to take another break now. When I come back, I want to talk to Rosa about the IT field and how that seems to be burgeoning in St. Louis, filled, of course, with young people such as yourself. But I do have to take that break. We'll have more with Rosa Mayer and also with Scott Ogilvie. He is joining us by phone. Jeff and Randy Vines are with us in studio, as is Jason Wilson, from whom you just heard. Have to take that break. We'll do that now. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We continue our conversation on the role that young people are playing in our community today. With me in studio are Jeff and Randy Vines. They own STL Style on Cherokee. Rosa Mayer is Director of Business Relations with Launch Code. Alderman Scott Ogilvie joins us by phone. He is a St. Louis alderman, obviously. Jason Wilson is with us. He owns Chronicle and Northwest Coffee. Have I left anybody out? I don't think so. Rosa, let me come back to you. I'm interested in the amount of energy that is taking place in the city right now in the field that you've been in for a while now, the IT field, the high-tech field. Describe that for me, and how is it working here in St. Louis, and why is it working so well here?
Yeah, it's a combination of a lot of people putting a lot of effort into it, and so kind of the things have built off of each other. I was involved in the downtown T-Rex space and kind of watched that grow, and startups kind of help each other out to continue to hire people. And then it has led me to work for LaunchCode, which mm-hmm. is I joined that team because I couldn't tell you how many people were saying we don't have enough tech talent, and then people mm-hmm. who didn't have any jobs. So to try to match the two and get people in our community, jobs in our community, sound like what I wanted to be involved in.
Is there any kind of a generational divide in that field? I mean, I think we all sense that everyone here has a smartphone and they're tweeting and they're doing all sorts of things with electronic gadgets. Older folks, not so much.
Yeah, I think most people think that everyone in T-Rex is so young and that launch coders are all young, but we have to actually scratch that. There's a lot of people that need second careers and second waves, and so it's across the generation.
Scott Ogilvie, what's your sense of the energy factor here in the city of St. Louis to keep things going, to stir the momentum?
Well, you know, St. Louis, as long as I've lived here, has always seemed like a place with a lot of opportunity and a lot of potential, and a place where maybe we don't communicate those opportunities and that potential as well as we should. It's also a place that I think internally tends to struggle with its story. You know, I sometimes find that if you ask somebody else, somebody from another city, you know, tell me about Boston or tell me about Seattle, they can give you the cliff notes pretty quickly on how they feel about their city. In St. Louis, you get a lot of different answers, and I think that there actually has been kind of an intentional way that a lot of people have started to attempt to tell the right story about St. Louis and tell a positive story, which is there for sure. And I sort of view St. Louis as this incredibly, or at least potentially incredibly vibrant place, doing a lot of things right, really with the exception of suburban sprawl. You know, for me, if we could take the whole region and kind of give it a hug and squeeze it all together a little more closely, I think that we would be really one of the premier places in the entire country. Unfortunately, we've lost some of our potential through suburban sprawl, but I think we are working you know, in an intentional way to rectify some of that.
Let me ask you, Jeff, for a very quick answer to this question. I'll ask the others as well before we bring another voice into the conversation. Does St. Louis have an inferiority complex? Scott, I'll ask Scott first, then work with the Vines boys.
Do we have an inferiority complex?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I think, Don, you've been in St. Louis longer than I have. Maybe you are more qualified to answer that than I am. If we do, or if we don't, though, I think the key is that we are always sort of looking towards the future and figuring out what we can do better. And if we do have an inferiority complex, we need to put it aside because, you know, the world doesn't wait. And if we've made mistakes in the past, you know, we need to learn from them and move on. And I think look to places that have made better decisions in some way and do whatever we can to copy or emulate things that, you know, could work in St. Louis as well.
Let me ask the Vines twins, inferiority complex?
I would say that there's definitely some truth to that, but it's also important to put it in perspective here. It's, you know, St. Louis has an inferiority complex much the same as Detroit and Cleveland and Baltimore and Pittsburgh and these other Rust Belt cities that once reached a level of prominence and have since fallen from grace over the years. When the people who live here are constantly inundated with reminders that we're not what we used to be. And it kind of wears, you know, on our collective consciousness in a way that maybe
manifests as an inferiority complex. However, I see that shifting dramatically, especially in the last 10 or 15 years, where you used to be like, oh, I'm stuck in St. Louis, or, you know, I can't wait to get out of here. Now you hear the opposite sentiment so much more often, at least we do, in the circles that we run with. And I think that, you know, it, like so many other long-held, you know, customs and traditions in this city that have either held us back or just been throwbacks to another era, I think that's fading away and giving way to a genuine enthusiasm for the city.
Any other quick thoughts on that? Because I want to bring in yet another Rosa. You don't feel stuck here because you stayed here willingly, right? Voluntarily,
yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Jason, a thought?
Yeah. I think there's definitely an inferiority complex in St. Louis when compared to other big cities. But also, I also want to say, when you think of the growth of the city, what's holding us back is this class divide. And if you think of China Hub, we had an opportunity to become a major hub and spoke for the United States shipping and things of that nature, and we kind of blew it.
Yeah. And yet here we all are staying here and willingly. There's something about it that we love, obviously, or we wouldn't be here. Now I want to bring another guest into the conversation. That'll be Jonathan Goldford. He's the board chair of Launch St. Louis, which develops young leadership for St. Louis nonprofits. Jonathan, thanks so much for waiting. Sorry to keep you on hold for so long.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to get your assessment, if I could, of what you see as the leadership potential among young people in our community.
Oh, I mean, it's incredible. So at Launch St. Louis, we're working with young people all the time and just trying to connect them to nonprofit organizations. And I'm constantly blown away by not only the potential, but the energy. And I know you guys have touched on that a lot, the energy that young people are bringing to the table now. I mean, people from all different walks of life, all different cities. And in the past, I feel like you'd have people who maybe would say, you know, I'm not really connecting with the community here. I don't feel involved. And they would maybe move to another city. And whereas now you have young people saying, how can I engage? How can I connect? Where can I really feel like I'm a part of something? And that, I think, is leadership in itself. It's really stepping up and saying, you know, forget what everyone else is doing. I'm going to take the leadership here, and I'm going to take ownership over this, and I'm going to find an opportunity where I can really do something I'm passionate about.
Why is that, and how different is it from a few years ago?
I think maybe in the past, and I think it comes a lot from the energy that's developed in St. Louis. I mean, I think people have confidence now that St. Louis has opportunities for them. I think in the past, St. Louis was maybe seen as a place where things weren't developing, where there wasn't that energy, where there weren't a lot of new businesses and startups and entrepreneurship. And I think people see it very differently now. They, you know, when they look around, they don't say, oh, there's nothing here for me. They say, hey, there's opportunity, and I'm not seeing it, or I'm not finding it. I need to go seek it out.
Is there opportunity? You know, one of the things I notice is that with almost 70 million baby boomers out there, many of whom are still working, they're at the top of the ladder, and the young people coming along have to wait for them to get out of the way before they can move up.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, especially from nonprofits, because that's who we work with all the time, they're constantly looking for young people to get involved. You know, they're, like you said, they're seeing an aging population, whether that's through staff or volunteers or their board membership, and they're constantly looking for energetic young people to take leadership roles, to join boards. And I think their issue is recruitment. So I think they're really trying to figure out, how do we connect with young people? You know, a lot of times it's not people who are digital natives, who aren't used to using social media. And so they're constantly struggling for, you know, where do we find these people? And I think from the flip side, I think you have young people who are saying, where do I find these nonprofits to get involved with? And so it's really being able to connect the two.
I'll ask this question to you and then take it to the others with regard to the biggest challenges that you see ahead for what you do.
I think the biggest challenge is finding a way to communicate to young people all the opportunities that are out there. So, you know, before, and I think we're still continuing to develop this, but I think before it was, there weren't a ton of opportunities. So how do we develop these opportunities? And now the question is, how do we really inform young people of all the things that they can be involved with? I mean, you know, we have young people coming to Launch all the time saying, you know, how can I get involved? Where can I get involved? And there's just so many options. So how do we really kind of distill down what makes the most sense for them and what's something we feel like they're going to be passionate about and they're going to feel like they really enjoy doing for the long term?
Let me put the question to the others, and I'll start with Rosa. The challenges as you see it.
Challenge. Well, one thing I was going to say is people people look at me and say, you moved here from New York. Why? It's like, what are you not
getting?
Have
you ever rented an apartment in New York?
Yeah. So a challenge is just fixing that mindset, and that needs to happen.
Right. Do you sense it's happening?
I do.
You do. Okay. Jason?
There's economic disparities and education disparities, and in a swath of the city that's densely populated with Black Americans. And if we don't think there's an issue with this, I don't know what else to say, but St. Louis is constantly growing. Look at Cortex. Look at all these areas that are getting new market tax credits and things of that nature. But the north side of St. Louis is still looking worse than Beirut as we speak. And, I mean, I love North St. Louis, and there's some pretty places over there, but art is different to everybody. And so when you look at this space, it's amazing.
Scott Ogilvie, challenges?
The region's biggest challenge is containing sprawl. You know, we made it very easy for folks who see an issue in their community to just move far away with no penalty, rather than sort of sticking it out and finding solutions. So, writ large, I think that's the region's biggest issue. In local government, I see a lot of need for some pretty substantial reforms in the structure of our local government. Is one thing, and I think the other thing is, as we bring new elected officials in, or new staff to the city, making sure that everybody sort of is thinking about the big picture, thinking about the whole city or even the region, rather than sort of the minutia of what's going on in their block, so to say.
All right, now to the Vines boys.
Part of loving a city is knowing when to criticize it when it's appropriate. I would say the biggest challenge that I witness is a host of misguided priorities. A lot of that is from elected officials. A lot of that is really from voters, too. So let's be fair. But I guess the long and short of it is, if not to get too political, but if we were to give citizens of St. Louis from all walks the same hundreds of millions of dollars that the city is giving Paul McKee to develop 2 square miles on the north side, I think amazing things could result from that. I think just a generation of the city trying to compete with the suburbs, which is a major mistake and hasn't really had a great outcome for our region. We're still relatively stagnant, and I think we're at our best when we act like a city. Enough with the parking lots. We need to make the north-south Metro line a priority for the region, and if streets and neighborhoods are the veins of the city, then transit is the blood that flows through them. And we need to reconnect some of these divisions that we've created over the last 60 years.
Jonathan, anything you want to add to that?
No, I mean I think all of those points were very well made.
All right. Well, we have 2 minutes left, and that's almost unfair. It is unfair, but I have to do it anyway. Just get a quick cap to all of this from you, and I'll start with you, Rosa. Put a bottom line on all of this. Young people in St. Louis today. The role.
Okay. Yeah, sure, the role. Hey, it's on us to make the future better, and so step up in whatever you're passionate about and angry about. Make your voice heard.
Perfect. Jason?
Middle-class Black America, step your game up. Also, we need to be more inclusive with the city so that the whole city can survive and be more substantial.
First and foremost, come together in a unified solidarity effort to reunite our region, everyone in it. Also, stop trying to make excuses for the shortcomings that face this region and embrace our imperfections and use them as teaching moments.
Right.
I think the door is wide open. St. Louis is very accessible, and you're not sacrificing a really rich sense of place here. We're one of America's great cities. We have that legacy to always build and strive towards.
Scott Ogilvie?
Young people need to vote in local elections.
Spoken and, like a true politician.
And, get in the game. There really are opportunities for younger people. It's not going to be running for office for everybody. But change can be slow, but it never happens unless you start kind of pushing the wheel. So you gotta try.
All right, Jonathan Goldsworth, final word.
Yeah, I would echo what everyone else said and just say that, you know, if you're a young person looking to get involved, go for it. I mean, St. Louis is really, I think, more than other cities, encouraging young people to get involved and engage. And I would also say, just make sure it's really something you're passionate about, because if you are passionate about it, you're just so much more likely to have a huge impact on our area.
Jonathan Goldford, thank you for being with us, board chair of Launch St. Louis. With me in studio also, Jason Wilson, owns Chronicle and Northwest Coffee. Alderman Scott Ogilvie joined us by phone. Rosa Mara is with us, director of business relations with Launch Code. And Jeff and Randy Vines of Own STL Style. They own STL Style on Cherokee. Thank you all so much for being with us. I wish we had more time. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with psychologist Wes Crenshaw, that is, about the maturity of today's young men, as well as decline in coupling by teens and young adults, as well as conditions warrant. We'll update the situation surrounding that shooting in Ferguson. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.